Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy, because everybody now has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Dr. or Professor, something of that nature, Victor H. Fisher. Welcome to the program.
Well, hello. How are you this fine day?
I'm really quite lovely, especially now that you're here.
Really quite lovely, huh?
Yeah, I don't really feel quite this way very often, but yes.
How about that? Well, it's usually lovely is not masculine, but that's okay. If you feel lovely,
don't worry.
I feel healthy, so that makes us both in good shape.
That's good, because I don't usually feel masculine either. Speaking of which, you're a bit of a brain expert and an inventor and such, and you know so much about how the brain works and the chemistry and the thinking process and all of that sort of thing. I was wondering, just in all your years, Victor, what are some of the most important lessons that you've learned about just life in general through studying the brain?
Well, when you know how the brain is works, it makes life a lot much more pleasant. My frustrations are minimized. We'll put it that way. Because I know when before I did my research, I was constantly bombarded with frustrations that I couldn't understand why other people didn't think like I did.
And yeah, well,
some of my bosses. So
that can always be a real harsh one, working underneath people who are beneath you.
Well, fortunately, that's one of the interesting aspects about organizational setups is that usually the most incompetent are the highest level, and therefore I was always blessed because in a normal setup my bosses were always given the opportunity to select their people to work with, and they were usually, in fact, I think in almost all cases, we had a good rapport. and it was just their bosses were the big problems of my I had. So then I had to select out other channels to bypass them, and in most cases I was successful in that area.
Is there some kind of a brain chemical thing that makes people desire to be incompetent and in power at the same time?
Well, it's not really a chemical. It's an actual built-in hardware. The person that is most incompetent knows that he is or she is. And therefore, they're very defensive, and the best defense is a strong offense, and so they push to climb the ladder of an organization. They learn how the politics of corporations, and so they push very hard to climb that ladder. A person that is competent is usually self-employed, so to speak, to handle the conflicts at his level. If he's a design engineer, to be a good design engineer and not really worry about corporate politics.
Well, I'm sorry, I don't quite understand exactly how that really affects their behavior.
See, the point I'm trying to make is that in my research, I was able to see there is a difference in the basic architecture of the human brain in the area of anticipation, and so what I did is I designated these primary differences as being prospective or retrospective, and that is a built-in hardware resource architecture, I should say. And so the retrospective individual knows basically day one that they need an external information source, whereas the prospective from day one they are self-motivated, and so they look out for they get joy out of conflicts, because that gives them an opportunity to show off, in a sense, or be successful and be happy in being able to solve conflicts, where the retrospective individual cannot handle conflicts because
I'm sure this phenomenon of the prospective and retrospective people have existed for a very, very long time in humanity. Are these people generally psychopathic in nature or something like that?
It depends. See, when you get into the psychopathic aspect or antisocial aspect, now you're getting into another extension or expansion of the divisions. And what I mean by that is that there is another element, which is the difference between being mentally motivated versus physically motivated. So if you are mentally motivated, that means that you will, in your solution of a conflict, you will respond to a conflict with a mental attitude. If you are physically motivated, you'll respond to that conflict on a physical basis. In other words, you'll strike out physically. At the beginning of our research, we used to call that an animalistic characteristic. whereas the mentally motivated would be more of a humanistic relationship. So if you have a person that is retrospective and is physically motivated, he is a psychopath.
Okay, so basically they're prone to gathering stuff. Like they're sort of like a magpie, if you will, for gathering power and wealth, influence, information, that kind of thing. They view the world as sort of a suction cup platform for which they can attach their parasitic selves and slurp all the life out, essentially.
That's right. That's right.
And the reason why they
of organizations, whether they're a club or a country, are usually physically motivated people, and their capability as far as retrospective versus prospective is relatively more on the retrospective side, because again, as I said, the retrospective side has a bias to try to cover up their incompetence, we'll put it that way.
So every time you say something, they go out of their mind for some reason and start viciously attacking you. And little do you know, they had somebody else say something very similar to them once in their life, and it was very, very true. And it really, really annoyed them. And now, you suffer the wrath.
Usually, the more retrospective. See, the problem with the retrospective is again, and the prospectives is we're talking only about anticipatory capability. A prospective is able to say that if A equals B and B equals C, that C equals A. In the case of a retrospective, A equals B and B equals C, and C doesn't equal A. And so it's just it's like having a patchboard plugged in backwards. And so the fortunate part or unfortunate part is that the brain as a system is actually broken up into different physical capabilities, but also what happens is that we have what has been termed as the conscious brain, conscious state of the brain, and then we have the subconscious state of the brain. Now, basically those can be easily modeled by saying, as compared to a computer, is that the conscious part of the brain is the short-term memory and the logic center for handling conflict situations, because there's many CPUs, at least 16 central processing systems in the human brain. But the two that are involved with the two that are involved with logic. That's a special CPU, and it is there's one for each hemisphere, and so what you have there is the capability of having a situation where the retrospective person can only operate from his memory, because he can. Every time he tries to analyze a solution to a conflict, he or she will not get a correct answer. But if he uses his subconscious memory, which is really the long-term memory, that is almost always correct. And so if he uses that as his basis for handling conflict situations, then he becomes ambulatory. He's just like anybody else. Or she is just like anybody else. And this is where the confusion comes in with bipolar people, is that they seem to be rational the majority of the time. It's only stress situations that they really blow up and will react either verbally or physically. And so that's where we get this idea that there are two types of personalities, or that something occurs later on in life, and so everybody goes chasing around looking, why did that guy blow up, or why did... why did that gunman shoot all those people? So they look at the present or early past, and they get very confused as to the why, they then start chasing around and saying, what could have happened in their past that would make them do this sort of thing, when you don't know how the brain is structured, the questions of why becomes infinite.
Well, can I ask you something?
Okay,
I wanted a bit of advice on a thought I had. You know how, like, sometimes a crazy person will do some crazy stuff to you, and you're like, you know what? I don't understand why they're doing that or anything like that. I don't understand how they think.
Right.
And my perspective on this, if a crazy person's doing something and you're trying to understand how they think, the only way that you're actually going to understand how they think is if you drive yourself crazy thinking about it.
Right, that's true. That's exactly right. Is that this is where you get in fact, interestingly enough, I think, I don't know if you... got the news down there, but a couple of weeks ago, Obama found another place that he could spend some money that he doesn't have in the area of mental health.
I'm sorry, we're coming to break here, and the idea of Obama spending money that he doesn't have on mental health to add to all the other giant list of things that he has that he's paying for that he doesn't have money for is pretty amusing to me. We'll be right back with Victor H. Fisher, ladies and gentlemen, just a few minutes.
I got some so-called friends, smile right to my face, all when my back is turned.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest, Dr. Victor H. Fisher. Victor, you were talking about how Obama has just decided to spend a whole bunch more money on something mental healthy.
Yeah, not mental healthy. He was going to map the human brain. Like they did with the genes, trying to map the human genome. And
why? So they can patent that too?
Pardon?
Why? So they can patent that too?
Well, there was a big article in New York Times. Well, there's a lot of articles about it, actually, I should say. But there is one that's in the New York Times that outlines what his thought was, what he wanted to do. And one of the first thing that he thought that mapping the human brain was going to lead to new information to cure epilepsy. And the ironic part about this whole, and this is, he was going to, just for the first year, in the 2014 budget year, which starts in October, is that he was going to spend $100 million on this mapping program. And it was acknowledged in the article, at least, that new technology, new instrumentation is going to be necessary to do this, because they're now acknowledging what they have already is not adequate in that area. But the irony about the whole thing is, in my case, this is that back in 1962, we completed the mapping of the human brain, and so it was and we also patented a new form of detecting brainwaves and brain activity. So what he is proposing to spend $100 million has already been done, but has been specifically suppressed for these past 50 years, because we were able to cure epilepsy back then, 50 years ago, and at a very, very low cost, and as compared to what's not being cured today. There is a major push by the pharmaceutical companies to never cure epilepsy, because
or anything, really.
Well, that's true. Their system is set up to only treat symptoms and not get cures. That's true.
Well, that
if you cure a
perpetual
patient,
you get a kind of perpetual customer, because
that's right.
You never
exactly
give them
right
the opportunity to catch fish for themselves, as it were.
Yeah. Well, I just wrote a two-pager, one page and a half, which talks specifically about this area of healthcare. And let me read it to you. Up to and about 50 to 60 years ago, the medical profession lived by their Hippocratic oath, which mainly states that they must not prescribe treatments that would do harm to their patients. After the cure of polio was discovered and applied in 1962, nearly all of the healthcare industry's income was significantly reduced. Therefore, thereafter, the Hippocratic Oath has been ignored, and a newer policy was established, quote, to treat the symptoms and not the cause, end quote. More cures have been suppressed because a healthy person is not paying a healthy person is not a paying consumer for healthcare goods or services. Most governments worldwide have assumed that the healthcare industries in their countries are still complying with the original Hippocratic Oath. Therefore, they have allowed the policies for healthcare to be self-controlled. As a result of this misconception, governments have been financially supporting many fraudulent research projects, fraudulent formal educational textbooks and study plans, licensing agreements, and clinical procedures. For a few of the current healthcare specialties are co-conspirators to the suppression, I should say, of the cures are listed as follows. The first is psychiatry. The Journal of American Medical Association, JAMA, reported in 1962 a breakthrough research project, which later discovered the treatment for controlling and curing all forms of epilepsy within a three-month treatment period, using a very low-cost generic medicine. This discovery has been suppressed to this day, because its application would reduce the healthcare industry's total income by more than 50%, and that the majority of their patients would become healthy and happy. The second one is neurology. research projects stated above in the 1962 report by JAMA proved that the standard electroencephalograph, EEG, is not capable to record neurological activity within the human brain. Just within the last few months, brain imaging data was acquired at Harvard Center of Brain Science with their Siemens fMRI head scanner within the Department of Psychology at Harvard University in Cambridge. This data confirms that the current standard EEG continues to be misrepresented and is actually an electromyograph only records neurological activity of the subject's facial muscles, not brain, just the facial muscles. All reports obtained by the use of an interpretation of a standard EEG records must be considered as being fraudulent. Now, under psychology, within the last few weeks, there have been published reports from many different psychology departments at major American universities and one major Japanese university concerning the use of the functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI equipment to attempt to validate their very bizarre hypotheses to predict dreams and behavior. This is very apparent. It is very apparent that these researchers do not realize the risk of using fMRI head scanners for their fantasy research is a million times greater than any potential benefits. The human head MRI equipment was designed to be used for imaging the brain prior to brain surgery. The images show concentrations of blood. Usually blood concentrates where there are cancer tissue or tumors. The MRI acts like a microwave oven and starts cooking the cancer tissue. Since the brain surgeon is going to remove the cancer tissue, the risk of prior cooking is negated. When using MRI for pre-surgery information, the patient is blinded and is sensory deprived. And this is for don't get false images from mental activity. But using the MRI and with a healthy brain, which is what these researchers were doing, the subject is required to use their senses and thought processes. Their blood will concentrate in their thought processing locations, thereby will cook their thought neurons, cells, neural cells. This will cause deterioration of their intellect, and since the cooked nerve tissue is not removed, there is a high probability that the cooked tissue will decompose and become cancerous and cause premature death. Now, in general medicine, many patients will seek the help from general practitioners which have symptoms arising from an unknown cause, which is called idiopathic. Most of these patients can be classified as a psychomotor epileptic and will respond to the same treatment for the control and cure of a grand mal seizure epileptic. The reason that these two or more reason for that is two or more symptoms treatments are the same is that they all are responding to the same epileptic activating system, but in different brain locations. Once the attending doctor understands the neural physiology of the epileptic activating system, the diagnosis and treatment is very simple. Okay, that's the end. Any questions?
Well, you know, not some questions occur to me, just the general aspect of it. Have you noticed, Victor, that most things that you are widely promoted, usually within top fields, you know, whether it be politics or the medical industry or something of that nature, whatever their stated intention is and whatever this great machine is supposed to do, you can basically assume that it does the opposite while looking very fancy and being very expensive to operate. So somebody's getting rich and nobody else is getting healthy because of it.
Well, yeah, because here again, look at who's handling the purse strings to fund these this equipment and fund the hospitals and fund schools and pay off the doctors to prescribe their patent medicines and all this sort of thing. So, which are all antisocial, really.
Well, you make money off human suffering. It's the very epitome of antisocial behavior, is it not?
Well, yes. That's why it was all antisocial behavior. And you know, the managements, the top managements of these companies are highly predictable to be the psychopathic, you know, the retrospective with physical motivations.
I have that real very searing pain in my stomach whenever somebody talks about going to a lawyer or a doctor or they develop some kind of disease and they get told all these things that they should do and these machines that must work and these surgeries that you have to schedule and so on and so forth, waiting lists you have to go on. And I think to myself, you know, I think that's a whole lot of BS. When you don't understand what's going on, and... if you're in a hospital, trust me, unless the doctor's sitting there telling you step by step absolutely everything that's going on and everything they've learned, which they won't, you have no idea.
Right.
And if you're in a situation where you have no idea what's going on, imagine how much easier it is to convince you of things that aren't true, considering you've got no point of reference.
Yeah. No, in fact, there's a very interesting movie that I discovered just a couple weeks ago. The title is Fight for Life. F-I-G-H-T for Life, L-I-F-E. And it is a documentary that Jerry Lewis and Patty Duke play the leads in this movie. And it's about a... 6-year-old child, adopted child of the characters, and she became epileptic, she initially, her first seizure was when she had a high fever, 103 fever. But they immediately, you know, went down to the neurologist, the leading neurologist, I guess. And the most interesting part, from my vantage point, is that this movie was based on an actual case.
Victor, unfortunately, we're coming to break. Let's talk about the actual case when we come back. Victor H. Fisher is my guest, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Back in a minute. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Victor H. Fisher. Victor, what were you talking about before? There was a real life example of some kind of medical
treatment. Epileptic child. And it was the title of the movie is Fight, F-I-G-H-T, for Life, L-I-F-E. And it was recorded for DVD in 1987. But the actual event, which was the basis of this movie, actually occurred in 1977, and well, 77 and 78, actually, in those two years. And the irony about this particular movie and this particular event, it was that it occurred in the city of Columbus, Ohio, and the only relief that was offered to the father, played by Jerry Lewis, was to take his daughter to England for a treatment for epilepsy in England, because it was suppressed in the United States, and by obviously the pharmaceuticals. And so the part of that coincidence is that my research, which I conducted as a senior scientist at Battelle Memorial Institute, was located in Columbus, Ohio, and it was tested. The equipment was tested at the Columbus State Hospital, which was the largest mental health hospital in the state of Ohio, and that was in 1962, I should say. And was reported in the Journal of American Medical Association in 1962, which verified the validity of the my research, and they illustrated that this was a breakthrough technology that. Proved, well, that was my initial proof that the standard EEG was a fraud. And so 17 years, I'm sorry, less than that, 77 and 62, is only 15 years. 15 years later, it got my breakthrough technology, which was also stated by Dr. Haynes, which was the director of mental health for the state of Ohio, as being breakthrough technology and will improve humanity. And 15 years later, in the same city, just miles apart, there's the most prominent neurologist. Ignored my research.
This is the institution. I find it very funny how they call it mental health when their approach to health is pretty mental. Kind of like how the criminal justice system approaches justice in a criminal way.
In a criminal way, that's right. So it's going to be interesting to see what's Obama. I don't think that it's. I don't even think that he's going to be there in for the next fiscal year, anyways. But that's another story. But the
Do you know something that we don't?
Well, I think that basically the. From an economic point of view, the corporation, the United States corporation, is insolvent and bankrupt. So it can't print money out of thin air anymore. So if you're bankrupt,
I don't know about that.
Huh?
I don't know about that. they can print as much money out of thin air as they want because they're printing it out of thin air.
Yeah, but see, the unfortunate part about money, it's a psychological phenomena. You get a piece of paper, a piece of Monopoly dollar, and you put a value on that piece of paper psychologically. And when people will stop saying that this is just Monopoly money and it has no value because it has no backing, because they're all of Federal Reserve notes are debt instruments, there's nobody going to be paying, where are you going to get the money to pay the debt?
Somebody once handed me a $50 note that had the words "This is your God" written on it.
Well,
that's all money is a belief system,
right? But see, that's the point is that like China right now has 40% of the countries that are productive. Well, they got actually 100% of the countries that are productive, but which represents 40% of the GDP in the world, and they're swapping currency without going through buying dollars, which has been the so-called reserve currency for since 1913.
I think it's more like being the perverse currency.
So, if nobody is accepting your dollars, where can you pay your payroll? Where can you buy equipment? For your military or Social Security or anything else.
Well, presumably they'd come up with some kind of new central banker-controlled global currency that nobody can escape from, you know.
Well, that's a myth. There is not going sustainable. See, what you're saying is they're going to expand the euro, which is a.
Oh yeah. Well, thing is, I'm not saying that they're doing it based upon a rational thing like, oh, this is going to be great. We're going to have the American dollar, American continent dollar, like the Amero or whatever. And, there'd basically just be a currency regulation market where the central bankers just control everybody's value of currency. And they just play, move them. It's like musical chairs monopoly, essentially, and you'll give all power to the bankers.
Well,
that's why I think currencies are going to be regulated in the future by ruthless criminal sociopaths who have total control over it and make it up off the top of their head at the same time.
Well, see, that is what's caused the problem with the euro. The bankers are controlling the euro. That's what's causing problems with the United States, with the bankers controlling the dollar. That's what's causing all of the problems that is using what we call fiat or government issued money, what the Chinese is doing is they're saying that they will accept a ruble from Russia and whatever the other countries' currencies are, and these other countries will accept the Chinese yuan. And they are bypassing the whole banking system that was set up around the Federal Reserve System. So that
Well, aren't the Chinese artificially suppressing the value of the yuan as well?
Oh no. The yuan, in China we call it the RMB, the people's money, it's printed the yuan, which is the Chinese version of the yen for Japan. The symbol is the same symbol for yuan and yen, but And that's why we internally talk about RMBs and not beyonds. The symbolic, it's a translation. The Chinese translation of yen is yuan. But they're two separate, obviously have two separate central banks. The central bank in China is called the People's Bank of China, and it is also the Treasury of China. But it is independent, totally independent. But see, the top four banks, as far as profitability is concerned, in the whole world, are Chinese banks. The highest, the top one, number one is the ICBC, is the initials for the top one. To show the difference between the Chinese banking system as compared to, even New Zealand, the Chinese banks are required to maintain 20% of their deposits as reserve money.
As opposed to 10% in the West. Hey, Victor, unfortunately, we were running out of time for this hour. You're not able to join us for the second hour, are you?
Well, yeah, I can go one more hour.
All right. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, in just a few minutes for another hour with the fabulous and wonderful and always insightful Victor H. Fisher. Back in a minute.
Particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation to fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.